Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Hilary Frainey on her Guy Quackenbush novels, examining spiritual warfare among the youth.
There's an urgency about the stories that I'm telling, or God is telling, for kids that are struggling with their faith, kids that don't know the Lord at all, kids that don't know that there's an enemy out there ready to take them down.
Hilary Frainey next. Today's guest resides near Carson City, Nevada, not far from Pilgrim Radio Studios. She's a writer, and her chosen genre is Christian teen and young adult mysteries. Spencer Dahlke is with her to find out about her Guy Quackenbush Boy Detective series.
I am new to your series. Would you tell us a little bit about who Guy Quackenbush is and how you came up with this character?
He's just an ordinary kid. A normal kid living in a small town near Santa Cruz, California. He loves God. He's been a believer since he could walk. He's the kind of kid that has a soft spot for people, especially old people, kids that are, you know, little kids that are younger than him, and animals. He has this compassion that God's given him. He is extremely inquisitive and questions everything. His friends tell him all the time that he thinks too much, that he way overthinks everything. He's also told by a really special friend that God's given him the gifts of wisdom and discernment. And he uses those talents in kind of an investigative kind of life for a kid his age. And he has aspirations, of course, to be a detective or something similar that would investigate. And he doesn't know what that looks like yet, but he will eventually. I got the idea for Guy. My husband and I were watching a Civil War documentary, and there was a soldier from Georgia or North Carolina named Quacken. I don't remember his first name, but his last name was Quackenbush. And it just sparked something in my brain that said, what a neat name. What a quirky name. And God just started giving me ideas for this first book in the series. And then, I thought I was done after the first one, but I wasn't.
What is interesting about you is that you're a local author. You know, we often have a lot of, national authors from all across the country, but you're from Dayton.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yep.
It's real close to even like our offices. So
yeah, about 15 minutes away.
How did you come to Dayton and tell us about your life a little bit?
Oh, that's a little bit of a crazy story, but I think everybody, most people in Dayton are from California. My husband and I moved here about 10 years ago. And the first time we came through here, we thought, houses of ill repute, we'll never live here. And, God had other ideas. But we just felt led. We came to visit some friends that live in Dayton, and we just felt led that it was a move we needed to make. And there's a whole another story behind it, but I'm sure we're kind of limited on time, but we love it here. And it's inspired me and my husband to follow the Lord more closely. And we have a great church in Dayton that we love, and have two wonderful grandsons that live near this little small town that's typified in the books near Santa Cruz, California. So that's a little bit about me.
How did God call you to being a writer? Like, is your writing kind of a more recent thing, or have you always been a writer? How'd God lead you there?
I've always loved to write since I was a little girl in elementary school, but I never thought about doing anything serious with it until we moved here. It started off writing two children's books that I mentioned to you a little while ago, about 5 years ago. Then they were written for my grandsons. I never thought about publishing them. I just thought, oh, I'm going to do something for the kids. And then about 2.5, 3 years ago, I got the idea for Guy Quackenbush. I just felt really impressed upon by the Lord that I needed to speak to teenagers and young adults. And that's where the guy Quackenbush series has led me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't get serious about it until probably 3 years ago. Yeah. And I never set out to write a series. I was just going to write this one book. But when that one was finished, I immediately got another idea from the Lord to do the second.
That's a lot of writing to do in, you said, 3 years. I have tried to do some novel writing myself, and I am no good at it. It takes me forever to even write one small little part. How do you do it?
Well, I know this is hard to believe, but I don't do it. The Lord has given me this gift, and I don't know what I'm going to write. I'm serious when I tell you this. I don't know what I'm going to write until I sit down in front of the computer and put my hands on the keyboard, and then it just gets supernaturally downloaded, and it just flows. I think that's why I can write so quickly. I feel like there's an urgency about the stories that I'm telling, or God is telling, for kids that are struggling with their faith, kids that don't know the Lord at all, kids that don't know that there's an enemy out there ready to take them down. That's their prime goal, is to go after the young while they're weak and vulnerable. And yeah, kids from families that don't have good parenting. And so my heart goes out to those kind of kids, always has. And that's what's coming out in the books, in the series.
I unfortunately didn't have a chance to read very much of your books, and certainly not your whole series. But I have heard that you write a lot about spiritual warfare across, especially like some of the later books. What impressed that particular theme on your mind?
Well, it truthfully was just another idea. Once the first book was finished, God immediately gave me another idea. And it was a memory that I had that I hadn't even thought about when I was probably a preteen or a young teenager. And there was a woman that lived in our neighborhood that was very mysterious. She lived alone. She was known to be cranky and rude. And everybody, all the kids called her the witch. And people teased her and threw water balloons at her house and toilet papered her yard. And that triggered the second book, The Witch on Pinecone Drive. Immediately after the first chapter, well, right at the end of the first chapter, guy runs into her. She lives in his neighborhood, and he runs smack into her and realizes that she's possessed by a demon. He sees it. So that's how that started. And the woman in the second book is very key in the following books. She's mentioned and referred to throughout the series. She's a really key figure in trying to get across the notion that kids have to be prepared for what is coming up against them.
Nothing's new under the sun. Ecclesiastes reminds us this, but it does seem like, especially in our world recently, that kids might seem more interested in like the occult. I would have to like research this more, but
no,
it seems
you're right.
We've moved from rationality of the early 2000s to more Eastern spirituality, you know, spirits and this sort of a thing. Do you have thoughts about that? Like, what do you know about that? I'm curious.
Well, it's interesting that you brought that up, because I recently heard Jack Hibbs speak on this very thing. He's a pastor in Southern California that has one of those mega churches. And he spoke about how in recent years, children and kids, teenagers, young adults are drawn more and more to the occult and to witchcraft. That's nothing new, like you said, under the sun, because we know from Genesis that Adam and Eve are told that they can be like God. And so it's an old part of Satan's playbook to liken yourself to being a god. You don't need the god, because you can become a god. And it's nothing new. Satan's using it today to go after our kids. And anything that's enticing, anything that's a portal that Satan can use, like, well, Jack Hibbs mentioned the word, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, but pharmakeia. And it's a word found in Revelation that means pharmaceutical. And so one of Satan's biggest portals or entries into a kid's life is drugs and pornography and idolatry of celebrities. It's become cool not to be a Christian. In fact, you mock Christians, you dispel the gospel, and it's even okay to kill Christians. These are the things that are coming against our young.
It'd be very softball question, I suppose, to ask how those ideas make their way into your books.
Well, every book gets a little darker. I don't know. The first one doesn't really deal with spiritual warfare per se. The second one is pretty dark, but they progressively get more involved with the fact of that we're surrounded by principalities and powers. And there's warfare. There's spiritual warfare with angels and these demons around us all the time. We just don't see it. But it's there in all the chaos that we see in the world. That's what's causing it. Dark powers that have been given permission by God to do what they will do to bring about his purposes for the end of days. And when he comes again to judge, each book has a certain set of characters, Guy and his friends and his family, but also each book has a different set of characters that Guy gets involved with and gets involved in a particular mystery. Or like the last book is probably the darkest, and there's a double murder that Guy does not want to get involved with. I don't know if I mentioned, but each book, Guy gets older. The first book, he starts off at 13 years old and progressively gets older. And the last book, he's 21, and he's just gotten married, and he's expecting a baby. And he stumbles onto another case that he doesn't want to get involved with because he wants to concentrate on his wife and his baby. But he gets sucked in, and God impresses on him that he has to get involved and he has to help solve these murders. So it's cumulative how the occult and the spiritual warfare happens with any given set of characters in each book.
Well, my guest today is Hillary Franey. She's the author of the Guy Quackenbush series, and you just published Break a Heart Road, the latest installment in your series. And I read, I think, like the first chapter or two of your newest book, the Break a Heart Road.
That's the one. Yeah.
Almost judging a book by its cover. I don't want to assume like I know where it's going, but it seemed like, at least from the very, very small bit that I read, that you deal with like themes of like death, dying with dignity. Would you say that's accurate?
I really believe that our kids, even preteens, teens, definitely preteens, need to know about death. They need to know about spiritual warfare. They need to know the uncomfortable parts of the Bible at an earlier age than we think they're ready for. Because sometimes if we wait too long, it's too late. By then, they've been influenced by God knows what. So there's a double murder. And the characters in the book, some are saved. The strangers in the book, some are saved, some are not. One character in particular is very evil. In he's kind of the nemesis of his brother. They've grown up together in a horrible environment at home. And the good brother, I liken them to Cain and Abel in the book. The good brother is kind and loving and doesn't understand the evil in his brother. It's quite a plot. It really is. It's pretty intricate in how Guy solves the mystery.
It just strikes me as a good thing to talk about death. Like, I don't know if you've, I heard somewhere, I can't remember exactly where, but something about like, you know, 100 years ago or something, it used to be that we would talk about death quite a bit as human beings. And then like sex was the taboo, but now we've kind of like reversed that, where everything is just very sexualized and death has become the taboo. I guess thinking about that, like, you know, obviously as Christians, we have the gospel, and a framework to understand death and even have hope in light of death. I'm curious what your thoughts are about how parents who might be listening can come at the spiritual warfare that our young adults experience and introduce them to like ideas of that are like really dark. Like there are demons, you know, death is a real thing, and introduce that to their children that also like brings hope to from the gospel. You know what I'm asking?
I think that as Christians, having the gospel, having the new covenant, we're covered. We don't have, as parents, we don't have to worry if our kids are brought up in the Word. God's got them. They have their own salvation experience aside from their mom and dad. But once we're saved, yeah, there's spiritual warfare. Yeah, there's demons messing with us, but they can't touch us because God has us. We're His. We're His kids. We can be messed with, but we cannot be taken from our faith and our salvation. And we have that assurance. And that's the good news. That's the good part. That's pretty much the way all the books end. There's a lot of chaos and a lot of darkness, but in the end, God always wins. We have the victory in Him. You know, like you said, yeah, death has kind of taken a backseat to sexual matters, but we never really die. And kids that are brought up in the Lord know that they're never really going to die. In fact, I'm teaching a class at home discipleship ministry at our church, and we're doing a study on Revelation for kids. So it's not to scare them, but to prepare them. And they love it. It's really cool. I'm really enjoying it.
That's quite the undertaking to teach Revelation to kids.
I have a really great study book by a great Bible teacher, Kay Arthur, and she's written this series on Revelation for kids. And it's pretty great. Mm. It's pretty deep, but I've studied Revelation quite a bit in other Bible studies. So I'm a little bit okay with it. Still sure. Figuring it out.
How much of the events that you write about in the Guy Quackenbush series comes from your own personal experience?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
Tell us about that.
You know, I've heard it said that when a writer writes, they're writing from their own experience, their own life. And it's really true. In fact, I see myself in almost every character. I see myself in Guy Quackenbush. I see myself. There's a really pivotal character in all the books named Teddy Farnsworth. And he's an old guy that Guy just loves. He's a neighbor. And so they strike up a friendship. And I see myself in Teddy. I see myself in Guy's girlfriend and later wife. I see myself in everything I write situationally is from something that I've seen or something that's happened pretty much across the board. I was really inspired by several authors. One, Frank Peretti. Are you familiar with his work?
Seem to recall hearing about him somewhere. Yeah, sure.
He was like the first author that, well, aside from C.S. Lewis, Peretti was the first author that took on spiritual warfare in his novels, in his early novels, and read his books and just went, wow, like everybody else did when they read it. The first one was This Present Darkness was the title of his first novel. And of course, C.S. Lewis, The Screwtape Letters, you know, and then of course the Left Behind series by Jenkins and LaHaye. And so, yeah, I think most authors do draw from their own lives and their own experiences.
What do you want your readers coming away with when they finish reading your series?
Well, I'm finding that a lot of parents and grandparents are reading the series in addition to teens. I don't recommend the books for kids under 13, because I especially the second, third, fourth, and fifth, because of the content. But the one caveat is if kids are brought up in the Word all their lives, they won't scare them. The books won't scare them. But kids that are not brought up in the Word, it might be a little strong. But I hope that people come away entertained, because they're fun. They're fun books and exciting at times. So I hope people come away, and of course, mostly the kids reading the books. I hope they're entertained. I hope they come away closer to the Lord. I hope they come away with a better knowledge of who He is and how much He loves them and how much He looks after them and protects them. I hope that parents and grandparents come away with approval. These books are great for their kids to read. They don't have to worry. They're very biblical in the doctrine that the books present. In fact, each chapter is followed up by a scripture that kind of confirms what's going on in the story. So I hope people come away from the books with just a better understanding of how God works and how much he loves us. And I just want to bring honor and glory to him.
Any particular moments, scenes that you wrote that were like, oh, this is a fun scene to write. This is really powerful. I really liked this.
If I could go back to the fourth book, it's called The List. If I could go back to that, I think that's my favorite of the five. I don't want to give too much away, but Guy becomes a benefactor of sorts in the fourth book. And he gets to do something that we all fantasize about. He gets to do something really magnanimous, and he's just full of generosity and compassion for people. And so he gets to step into this role, and he knows he's been appointed by God to do this. In fact, it becomes his vocation, and it involves investigating people. But he gets to be this wonderful benefactor, and there's an attorney involved in the story, and he's Jewish, the Jewish attorney. And it's just a really neat story that God, and I didn't plan it. I didn't have an outline. God just gave it to me chapter by chapter, you know, sentence by sentence. But there's a scene where the attorney is in his office. He's high above San Francisco looking out over the bay, and it's at night and nobody's in the office. And he's just gotten a call from an attorney in New York that tells him about this amazing thing that's going to happen to Guy. And he's probably a pretty well-off guy, but he's told that he's going to have a huge fee from this gift that Guy's going to receive. And he's in his office kind of giggling, looking out the window. And then the following day, he calls Guy's father, calls the phone number that was given to him. And he gets to make this appointment with his family, the Quackenbush family, to tell them what's coming. Of all the scenes I've ever written, I think those are my favorite. I think those stand out. It's just kind of fun and exciting because you can picture yourself in their shoes when it happens. Because we've all kind of been in this place of imagination and fantasy about what would I do if...
Going back to the themes of, you know, spiritual warfare and just examining the darkness and the powers of evil that are here in this world, I am reminded, and I'm just thinking about how, you know, as Christians, it doesn't seem to me we are called just merely only to avoid some things, but we are called into a pursuit of God and of good things, which can look different for, you know, maybe different people. For you, what has that pursuit of good, true, beautiful things looked like? And I'm curious if you could, I don't know, make some suggestions for what can our young people do to pursue good things?
Well, I would have to say, is it the fifth or sixth chapter of Ephesians where Paul talks about the armor of God? I think if kids learn what that looks like and what that means to put on your armor every day, to put on your helmet, your sword, your breastplate, you are equipped not to ignore spiritual warfare, but you're equipped to fight it. And it's nothing to be afraid of, not when you have the Lord, not when you have that that armor that protects you and enables you to do battle. That's why the armor is referred to. It's a battle. It's not something we hide under the covers from and are afraid of. We are given the power by the Holy Spirit to come against these dark principalities and powers. And I think it's a really fun thing for kids to learn about and participate in. And the younger they understand that armor, the less fear there's going to be and the more joy there's going to be.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Hillary Franey, author of the Guy Quackenbush Boy Detective Youth Book Series. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Seth Trout on the virtues of authentic masculinity.
C.S. Lewis liked the term chivalry, but it's basically the capacity to leverage your strength rightly to protect, but also the deep capacity to be gentle and kind and warm, especially to your wife is the main person in view there in 1 Peter 3, but also that includes to children or your employees at work and things like that, to have a chivalrous disposition.
That's tomorrow at the same time right here on His People. Thanks for listening.